We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Good evening, welcome to NUFC Matters, the Three Amigos, the perfect way to kickstart your Newcastle-less weekend, international weekend, of course, so no fixture for Newcastle United, and slightly shorter show tonight, an hour and a half, but still packed full of your favourite stuff on a Friday. Good evening to Steve, to Mitch and to George, and good evening to everybody in the chat, and all the moderators as well. Nice to see everybody in nice and early. FAB, something we're synonymous with Thunderbirds, Steve. It's all I ever think of is the, you know, the Thunderbirds taking off and the Deadly Enemy and Joe 90 and all the spin-offs. That's all I can ever think of when I hear FAB mentioned. But of course, the advisory committee, the actual minutes are out now. So we've had a look through them. I'm glad to say that me visit from downstairs to upstairs, by the time I'd done it once, I'd read them. And that's it. Nothing more to say, really. Very uneventful. Marion Williams put her apologies in. So that's the vice chair, I believe. Didn't attend the meeting. But everybody else was present and correct. Very uneventful, and exactly what it said on the tin, Steve. What was your view of reading it, and how would you have spent that 3 minutes?
How did I spend the 3 minutes? The 3 minutes of my life I'll not get back. You know what? It was supposed to be a fans' advisor, but it reminded me very much of some of the early and. I get some of the later fans forums that were held where the club kind of took control, where fans got bored and sick, and you know, various people were looking for new avenues for to communicate with the club, and were all dancing around the handbags looking for their own input and their own abilities to have external communication out with the group. That's what came to mind when I read the minutes. I don't think there was anything earth shattering in it. Obviously it's the first one, so they're finding their feet. Some of the questions, I thought, this is just a fans forum. There's nothing in depth. There's nothing probing. There's nothing, should Len White be inducted into the Hall of Fame and that type of thing? I mean, dear me. I thought it was going to be a little bit more highbrow than that type of thing. But I suppose all in all, first meeting, see how it goes. Marion Williams, I think she's a councillor at Newcastle City Council. So I would imagine that with budgets and the forthcoming election and canvassing and various other things, she's probably been tied up and been unavailable. I think she's on God knows how many different committees as well when last I looked. So she's obviously a busy lady. And in terms of, you know, the club's input, it was very much, well, this is the direction we're going. You know, this is how the commercial department runs. This is what you can expect. This is how we're going to interact. You know, some of the questions about, you know, could we have extra shirt sponsors? Could we have sponsors on the back of the shorts like the girls have and this type of thing? And I mean, DME, this is the sort of stuff that was raised God knows how many years ago. There was nothing in that I don't think I've not heard at either of a fans forum or a get together or read in the Chronicle from various interviews that have taken place over the last 4 or 5 months. Little snippets had been dropped in, little words from Darren Eales, things that have been picked up by Luke Edwards or Lee Ryder, or the guys at Newcastle World. So all in all, you know, a talking shop. I wonder whether it will have the sort of teeth that the Everton Fans Advisory Board seems to be putting out. They've always had a strange relationship at Everton between the board and the fans, and they've always been quite vociferous. And I noticed that their fans advisory board the other day actually stood up and said that the club should be challenging the Premier League in a far greater way, and should be calling on all of their fans advisory boards and all of the football clubs in the 20 to lobby for all of the penalties, etc., to be held in abeyance while we get to the nitty gritty of what's actually going on with profit and sustainability, how we've come to this position, etc., etc. I wonder whether our fans advisory board will get into that sort of political shenanigans, or whether it's going to be very, very much a what's the chips going to be like? How much are the chips going to cost? Can we have a different type of beer in one course to another? So as you can see, Steve, I'm going to stop talking because I'm going to have a sip of my coffee, and I'm going to leave the next bit to Mitch.
So, Mitch, what were your thoughts on the fan advisory board minutes?
It's funny, you know, I read them, and very much like Steve, I thought, I've seen this before. I've seen exactly this in minutes from fans forums, particularly older fans forums, the ones that we eventually gate crashed via Bill Corcoran to get him to see Derek, because that fans forum had become a talking shop. They'd become a self-appointed little talking shop where genuinely they were talking about whether the chips were hot enough and can we scrub off the graffiti in the bog. And then that fans forum that by certain groups in an effort to get more control decried and wanted dismantled. And now what they've got is exactly what they had before. So well done. Well done for that. I think some of the questions were embarrassing. Shows people who really don't have an idea about how certain things in the Premier League work. Either that or the questions were planted so that the board want to make certain things clear. I now know the name of the feasibility study for the ground. Wonderful. Let's give it a fancy name. Not interested. I genuinely feel if I'd been appointed to that board after that meeting, reading those minutes, I would have thought about resigning the day after. It's not a great optic when the vice... I don't care how busy shit is. I don't care. It's a terrible optic for the vice chair to just not bother to attend the first. Even in this day where you could attend by Zoom or you could do it, you should be shown how important that... I think it shows that these people don't grasp how an important thing this could be. But I also see what the club have turned it into. They had someone from the Premier League there, they had somebody from the Football Supporters Association there. Box ticking exercise. And that's all it's ever going to be. I see questions from the international appointee asking about Tia's event national membership. She's obviously not spoken to as many international supporters as I have, because they don't even know what an international membership gets you. What is the benefit of an international membership? They still can't tell us. It's still with legals, in inverted commas. And yet she's asking questions about making different tiers of membership to generate more money. Well, tell her what we'll get for the first level first. It doesn't get you anything. It certainly doesn't get you any help in getting a ticket for the game as an international member. And so, you know, there's questions being asked there that I just don't understand. Certain people have really hung that flag on the mast about certain things. Representative from the trust who says basically it's the trust's opinion, and I'd like to know how that opinion was canvassed, because that's how it should be, about ID checks and backing ID checks. It's the same individual who had the clubs here who told them that there was a touting problem, and the same individual who went out on Twitter and told everybody that that was the problem until they deleted the tweets. The axe forgets, but the tree remembers, lads and lasses. And it's even the Everton fab, who at times I think have been for Everton OTT in their reaction to what's going on, they've at least showed, particularly in the back of the Forest decision and statement, a bit of considered thought and understanding of certain processes in football and football finance. I'll give them that it's the first meeting. The first meetings are always sort of feeling out missions and finding things out. But I genuinely was dismayed and disheartened, because I see a set of minutes that I've seen before in many, many other meetings with the club that eventually become absolutely irrelevant. But looks really nice to say we've had a consultation with the fans and dressed it up as such. There's no teeth in that. There's just no teeth in any of the questions. And some of the questions I found quite baffling and showed a lack of understanding of how the game works and certain things within football work. And if that's the way they want to go, happy days. I'm past disappointed. And after this week with the medical team situation and everything else, I really feel cut off at the knees by my club now. I feel like I don't matter. And that's wrong. I shouldn't be sitting feeling that way. I should be buoyed that we've got a fantastic new method to try and direct some communication with the club. And I feel like it's just copy-paste from years ago, that we tried very hard to foster better relationships, and that people within the club as well, who remain from the Ashley era, are still protecting their fiefdoms and wanting things done a certain way, because that's the way it's always been done. And that doesn't help us as a club, it doesn't help the owners, it doesn't help anybody. And that really, I do find, you know, quite embarrassing. You know, I'll give you a personal example of something, how some of these things should be being done and the questions, in my opinion, should be being asked, and they're just not. As a season ticket holder, still, and I live internationally, and I was told you can only pass your ticket on 10 times and then we'll review your status as a season ticket holder. I spoke to someone who knows me reasonably well in supporter services. And the answer I got, well, it's Mitch, it's you. We know we can help you. We'll sort this out for you. That's not the answer. The answer should be our protocol for you as an expat season ticket holder is XYZ. And this is what we're going to do to help every fan in the same situation as you. It shouldn't be, because I know you, Mitch, I'm going to help you. That's not how it should work. And that's how this is working, in my opinion.
It's interesting you say that, Mitch, because I know someone who is in the corporate area and raised a question about tickets for games, away games. He was covered, but he wanted to know whether his wife would be covered and at what point he should apply for tickets. Bearing in mind, he had loads of points, but she didn't. And he got a similar response. Oh, don't worry about it. We'll sort you. We know you. And it's exactly the same response, but on a slightly different topic, but the same message. And it's turning into a not what you know, but who you know.
What would you do differently, Mitch? We can all criticise. I'll ask that before I go to George, to you, Mitch.
Yeah, we can. I would turn up. For the first meeting, I would bust me guts to turn up. B, I would be prepared to listen and ask questions strategically. The questions that I say asked aren't the burning questions on everybody's lips. And don't seem to be if that was a time. And so I think it needs to be, I'm trying to give them as much leeway as possible. First meeting, I get it, feeling out and need to understand. I want to see how it develops. I want it to see it get better. Well, doing it differently, it's not up to me, because that's how the club's done it and how the club set it up. And I think I'd say immediately, had I been involved with it, I don't think I would have stayed involved with it, because I think, like somebody's already said, I don't know if my blood pressure would take it. I'd lose my shit with someone somewhere down the line very quickly. And that's not what it's supposed to be about. I don't know whether I've just got to start caring less. But I'm exceptionally frustrated. I hoped for a better quality of insight into how the club works, and a better quality of questions when you've got the people who could be answering those questions on the spot in front of you. Now, some questions may not have been published because it is subject to NDA, and they say they won't publish things that are commercially sensitive. I hope there's another 10 pages of redacted information in there. I don't think there is, though.
No, I very much doubt it. George, you've sat on your fair share of committees and been involved in lots of meetings, and I'm sure you've been to some inaugural meetings of committees. Had time to read the minutes, George. How did that read to you?
People might not realise, but when Blair was Prime Minister, I was on his Cobra Committee. And I remember the first meeting of the Cobra Committee, and I was sitting next to this nice young lawyer who I thought, oh, he's going places. Oh, bloody Starmer, wasn't it? how things change. The most anodyne, soft piece of paper I've got sitting in front of me, and it's not going to take me further with knowing anything about my football club. It's not going to take me further knowing anything about the people who are sitting on this body. The club's got what they wanted. They set it up. They picked the people. There was never any sense of any representation from fans in a real sense. And you lads predicted it. We all predicted it. It was going to be a tick box job, and they've done that very nicely with the league and the supporters there, and then had a tick box throughout the session with the questions. I mean, what a great opportunity when he was talking about the commercial stuff and the financial regulations, all that, for somebody to say, why aren't we protesting about the way these things have been set up? Because it looks like they've been set up against Newcastle United. Or have they got an NDA that says you can have your takeover as long as you keep your gob shut? Is that why? Because what an opportunity to do it. And what a time to do it. And Neil's right. The Everton fans at least had a go, at least tried. That all of this, I mean, Darren Neal's statement is, we're going to build a results-driven, world-class, sustainable organisation, constantly achieves top six status for men's and women's teams, wins major trophies within the next 5 years. Well, we could have sat down and wrote that. It's when it starts to go right and at the minute it isn't. And the sad thing for me is that the bits that aren't working for me are still the same. The bits about fans, the whitewash over the ticket and stuff. Nobody challenged the ballot situation. That ballot situation is wrong. It shouldn't be called a ballot. It just isn't right, unless they put it right. But if it's a ballot, you've got to know how many's in. You've got to know how many gets them, and you've got to know who they are if it's a ballot. You can't just turn it into a church hall raffle. And even the church hall raffle's got better rules than the ballot does for Newcastle United. So all of those things got just washed over when there was a golden opportunity to make a statement on your first meeting. And he was absolutely right for his deputy chairman not to turn up. I mean, goodness sake. I would have had to be on my deathbed to keep away from that if I was deputy chairman. It really, really was. What a way to start is the only thing to see. And I, if the lady's very busy, well, good luck to her. But for this one, for Newcastle United, for the fans, if she's a real fan, that's where she should have been. Not in the Civic Centre. She should have been in St James's Park, and not knocking on the doors in Newcastle for elections in St James's Park to represent the fans that she's supposed to be representing. And as you can gather from beginning to end, just sheer frustration for me, and all very soft stuff. The stuff about the away tickets and the false tickets and. They just nodded their heads and said, okay, as long as you're going to do something about it. It's just not right. When is somebody going to wake up to the fact that business of putting false ticket in to catch people out is entrapment, and it's against the bloody law? When will somebody waken up? You cannot do that. Induce people into a situation that's going to get them into some sort of punishment, even if it is a civil thing. It doesn't matter. Entrapment's entrapment. And it went out in British law in the 70s, is my recollection. So, you know, for all that to go and just be nodded through and NUST get to say their piece and how they raise things and don't raise things and yes, sir, we'll do it again, sir. Very frustrating. But as I go back to the beginning, remember when it was set up? We saw what was happening. We saw how people were being chosen, not elected, chosen to go on the thing. And if it's going to have any meaning at all, surely that the makeup of that body's got to have some. It's got to have some backing of fans, like an election, like people standing up and throwing a hat in the ring and saying, "I want to do that. Give me a go." And when that didn't happen, I worried about what we would get. And sadly, what we've got is what I expected. And I'm sorry to expect it, but it's just depressing in many ways. The commercial questions, though, for a great opportunity for somebody in the audience to say, well, what we're doing about protesting about these rules? Because to us, it looks like they're written specifically to damage Newcastle United. Why aren't we doing something about it? Now, if the answer is, well, to get the takeover through, we had to sign an NDA with the Premier League, that's not an answer either. You cannot sign an NDA that's going to avoid criminal sanctions, because what's happening is wrong. So anyway, I'll go on forever if I keep on going. But it's so depressing. I loved it when Steve and Neil were talking about the old fans forum, where they talked about what kind of beer and what kind of chips. Now, the Neil might remember, I'm going to say something now. There used to be 10 of us go to St. James's Park in our group and used to have lunch as soon as the bar 1892 opened, have half-time drinks, have had tea after the match and watch the afternoon game before the Hoyd were out. And the breaking point with Ashley was one of the lunches we went, and my dad went on his fish and chips and mushy peas, and he couldn't have mushy peas. Why couldn't he have mushy peas? Because Ashley wouldn't buy the plastic containers for the mushy peas. Well, that's what we're getting to at this level. Where's the containers for the mushy peas? Sorry.
I think what we've got to do is what the fans advisory board members have got to do is they've got to be more proactive. They've got to be more probing. They are there to question the board. They're not there to put questions to the board in the manner that they did. Yeah. That's the sort of thing that happens at the various workshops. You know, it's pointless having a fans advisory board that are raising questions about tickets and that type of thing. What they should be doing is they should be listening to what the club's saying and then questioning the club on their answers, probing those answers, starting to dig deep, starting to extrapolate the data that they're coming up with and questioning them, putting them on their toes. That's the role of the fans advisory board. But they also need to work in concert. They need to ensure that they're working collectively together, that they all understand what their roles are. They all understand that they have a great opportunity to hold the club to account, to hold the board members of the club to account, the executives to account, the various departments to account. And the only way they're going to do that is being clever enough and knowledgeable enough to respond to the statements that the club's made and hold them to account on the day. Not holding them to account 6 weeks later or 6 months later, but they've got to be on their toes. And they've got to be in a position to when, for example, let's use the one that George used when Darren Eales read out a statement on what the 5-year plan is. Surely the first question was, well, how are you going to achieve that?
Yeah.
And then from that comes the answer or comes their response, at which point, okay, so how much is that going to cost? How are you going about getting that revenue stream increased by 30, 40, 300, 900, 2000%, whatever it happens to be, and start questioning them. What sort of direction? Will that mean there'll be changes within the ground? Will that mean that you're going to bring in more corporate clients? What will the impact on be? Because what you're going to be trying to do is trying to put a quart into a pint pot because you've only got 52,000 seats. And the more corporate areas you build, and the more corporate clients that you bring on board, the more pressure you're putting on under the existing seating areas and the existing season ticket holders and the existing members. Because let's face it, the members are the ones who are going to suffer because there are going to be less and less memberships, tickets available to those members on a match day basis. We've already seen it cut by 900 from the previous year. And if they're going to go out and they're looking for corporate clients and corporate sponsors, those corporate sponsors are going to want something for it. They're going to want tickets for the match. They're going to want areas of the ground that are better than a concourse in the Gallagher end. You know, how's this going to impact on Platinum Club season ticket holders who have got a bond that they're bonded to their seat for 100 years when they bought them, and I think they're already through 30 odd years, so they've probably got 65 years left on their bond. What are they? Would they move them? Would they change the Platinum Club scenario? What sort of knock-on effect will that have on the 1892? Because again, the 1892 club sits in a very, very prime location, within the ground. George and I have already heard that they're talking, you know, from the stewards who are that there might be changes afoot, but with those changes will be price rises, which will have an impact on a lot of people who can no longer afford the sort of prices that they're talking about, which will then see them replaced by people who can afford them, and that becomes the corporatization of a particular area of the ground. These are the sort of questions that the everyday fan wants answers to and wants start to raise conversations about, at least, at the very least, so that the club understands that we know what we're dealing with here. You're dealing with fans who understand St. James's Park, understand what it means to be in St. James's Park, and know what sort of entertainment they want. And how are you going to give it to them? But how are you going to measure that up with your own desires and wishes to corporatize? And we're not the only club. Chelsea, we're hearing it already. You know, the Chelsea Supporters Trust came out earlier this week with a scathing comments about the way that the direction the club's heading price-wise. We've seen Tottenham, who have done away with pensioners' concessions for next season on season ticket holders.
Yeah. I believe they've gone one further, Steve. It's now all concessions.
That's right. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I forgot there'd been an addendum to it. Yes, that came out later on. But you're right. These are the sort of thing. This is what the fans.
We're going to have the fan zone, so the plebs will be able to get a match day experience.
Yes, you'll be able to throw as much beer around as you like.
Well, and all the stuff in Silverstone's presentation about revenue was all directed at getting revenue out of fans. Have a look. It's nearly all about getting more money out of us.
Yeah.
Not more money out of the people over the fence. It's out of us. And if only half of what that steward told us about, and I'm not going to name him because he's somebody I've known for years and years, even if half of what he was saying is, I won't be a season ticket next season and season after next when my ticket's up, I won't be able to afford it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the questions that I would like to see. How are you going to get all these bits of revenue? If you look at all the email questionnaires we've dealt with this year, they're all directed in one direction. How many thousand pounds will you pay to have a seat next to the tunnel in St. James's Park? How many thousand pounds will you pay to have a seat up in the gods? How many thousand pounds will you pay for this, for that, the other? All directed at people who aren't even fans at the moment, never mind in the ground. All people that have got that. And I find that quite shameless. And look at what Silverstone's bit in it. It's all about getting, revenue, but revenue out of us. That's what he wants. I thought the idea was to get stuff in from outside sources. And when I see the list of people that he's talking about as sponsors, Fenix, for God's sake. Oh, dear me. No, thank you. I mean, yes, the local store with a great presence in London as well as Newcastle. But are they really going to put the sort of money into the football club that we imagine?
They were struggling. They were struggling before COVID. Absolutely, to stay open, is my understanding.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Yeah. I know some of the Fennings because of the other things I do, and they're lovely people, but they're not going to be in a position to stump up 20 million for this or 20 million for that, or even 5 million, I don't think. So if that's the height of his ambition, we've got a problem. You know,
we've only got an hour and a half tonight, lads, and this is quite a contentious issue, and there's lots of stuff in the chat, so I might cut one or two of our things that we usually do tonight, so we can continue with. Because Sean's asked a question. He says, "Has the club progressed since Ashley?" For me, 100% yes. We need to be careful about the mood change. New owners are literally just in the door. Let's not forget what went before, Steve. So, I mean, does Sean have a point with that? Are we being a bit too? I mean, we don't bring the topics up here. Newcastle United released the Fab, the Fab press release today, and what we've seen, Steve. Well, go on, George. You've got the bit between your teeth.
Well, yeah, because that's a question I've been putting to you lads since the takeover happened. Mm-hmm. I have trumpeted here, there, and even in Saudi Arabia for that film I did for them, trumpeted the benefits of this takeover. The one bit I've not trumpeted, and this goes direct to what he's saying, what they've done for the fans. They've done nout for the fans. Not really. Everything that's happened with the fans, with tickets and all the other things, has been to the detriment of the fans, not to the benefit. So, as far as I'm concerned, from a comparison with Ashley and us, Ashley didn't give a tinker's cuss about the fans. And it's beginning to look like these people are the same. Because they know that what the fans put into the club is petty cash. They want the big beans from other people. So the answer to him is, no, I yes, the club's changed massively since Ashley because of the takeover, and I'm delighted with it. But as a fan, they're still to touch my heart. I tell you, they're still to touch my heart.
Mitch?
They're not the new owners anymore.
No.
Yeah.
They're the owners.
Yeah.
Anything they do from here is on them. It's not on us. It's not. We can't be blaming Ashley. There are people within the club who remain from Ashley's era, who I believe are stuck in a mindset, and that needs to be addressed and dealt with. However, this club was left in such a state to just bring it all down and start again would have left with probably the square root of their fall. And so that was a difficult one probably to navigate. But it's the point I come back to, anything that they do from here is on them. We can't blame Ashley. We just can't. We have progressed. We've progressed on the pitch and off the pitch in so many ways. And that's great. But it's almost like we've had... It feels to me like we've been sold a vision and brought along on the ride. And now the people that were leading the vision and the ride have got off the train. And we don't know where the train's going now.
Yeah.
And nor do we have much ability to change the points at the next junction. And that's the frustration for me. I couldn't give a monkey's at the minute because I've seen the talking shops and the engagement. That 1.5 time entertainment and atmosphere was absolutely embarrassing. I'm sorry. Some of the stuff that was brought up in that, again, oh my God. And I shudder at it. We shouldn't need that. And it's all, in my opinion, window dressing. So I'll say what I've said before. I think they know what they want to do. So please, just go ahead and do it. Because I do think it's with the right intention in mind. I do think they want Newcastle United in a much better place. And Newcastle United in a much better place is the way to please every fan. We're always going to argue all that shit. That's our probably our greatest asset as Newcastle United fans is our ability to turn inward and argue with each other over the most banal things. Because by God, when we get it right and when we get it together, it's sensational. So my message to the owners will be, stop even bothering paying lip service to communication. Just get on and do what the hell you want and get it done quick. Because if things are as bad financially from a PSR point of view, as you say, you've got some very big decisions to make. So make them. And don't try and say, then when people kick off about it, oh, well, we've had consultation. Sod it. It's not if you can have consultation and still get it wrong. I'd rather you just did you what you think is right for our club going forward as custodians and owners. Yes, Sean, we have to be very box smart. Yeah. And yes, we're fighting all sorts of things that we knew we were going to be. And I think that's why, personally, we're just sitting back and letting things happen at the minute. Forrest's statement was phenomenal, I thought. Leicester, that's going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks. We'll probably talk a little about this over the next rest of the show. But from our point of view right now, we need owners who will take the lead again. And at the minute, the people who were taking that lead have been silent since Christmas and before, and we feel ever more like we're regressing a little bit. And we can say that and still say, yes, we're better off than we were under Ashley. Of course we were. Of course we are. Better off under somebody who put nothing into the club over a 10-year period and 10 million capex. You know, of course we know this. I'm quite happy for them to make certain decisions that piss people off, because they're going to have to. This is an omelette that's going to involve many broken eggs. And then it's up to us as a fan base and people with a platform and people with an understanding of how the fan base works to stick those shells back together again a little bit. We've done it before, we'll do it again. Because we know we can. And we know we can when the club's functional on the pitch and off the pitch. You've had a little taste of it, a little tiny taste of it last season. And you expected a drop off this season is what everybody's saying. I'm not convinced necessarily that they did. But either way, we've had the drop off. Now get on with it, make it better again. And you've had a taste of what you can have. Just a tiny taste. Get on with it.
Okay, lots of agreement with you. Some sensible comments, as always. That's what we love this chat for. Steve, summing up on this before we go to an ad break.
Yeah, I mean, the question was, is the club better? And it is. Well, under Ashley, we didn't have ID checks. We didn't have a membership scheme that's in an absolute mess. That just seems to be as long as the Tyne. We didn't have this ridiculous away ticket allocation and distribution system. We didn't have the policing of the points that's going on. We didn't have this ridiculous treatment of away fans with the spot checks that now require you to sometimes have to walk through to a complete the opposite side of a ground to have a replacement ticket issued. What else? The appeasement of minorities, because it seems to be that if you're a minority, then you get listened to an awful lot more because your ear it seems to be bigger, or their ear seems to be bigger when it's a minority that's whinging than the normal fan. We seem to be, somebody mentioned then that Mitch had gone, was talking about woke. Well, yeah, perhaps that's the situation that we're getting ourselves dragged into. I mean, the on the field, we've done remarkably well. We've heard that there's a 5-year plan. We're now into year three, season three of this plan. We're coming to the end of what will be season three. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, well, with every plan, if you rigidly stick to your plan and you've got a 5-year plan and you're not flexible enough to be able to adjust that plan as you go forward based on the success that you've previously had and you're constantly growing, then you've got to question the plan that you've got in front of you. All businesses, when they're evolving and developing and building, you're always reviewing and you're looking forward and you're looking for something more positive. You're looking for some more growth. If you hit your growth target early on, then you move your target even further. You know, that's the way that has to be. But there seems to be an awful lot of onus put on supporters, but there's an awful lot of decisions that are directly impacting supporters that are to their detriment, to be perfectly honest. So I think that I'm sick of the lip service that gets played out. And as Mitch says, they're going to have to grow some. But it's up to the fans that are representing us fans on this fans advisory board to make sure that they are going to hold the club to account. It's advisory. You know, you might not get from the board what you want from them, but if you're not asking them in the first place, you'll definitely not get it. There's no point in going along there and just doffing your cap to them. You know, and treating them as though that they are the owners of the shipyard and you're the boilermaker, you know,
what was happening to that in those meetings that we ended up gatecrashing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when me and you got invited along to Moor later, it was even worse.
Yeah.
And
yes,
and
Derek. No, Derek. It's great, Derek. Everything's fine, Derek. And that's why I'm so angry to see that is the first set of minutes descending immediately into that.
Yep, exactly. And if you remember, when we did that action, the first people who complained weren't the club. It wasn't the club who got on to you and I and moaned and groaned and complained. It was the club who got on to us and said, okay, lads, I think we need to talk. The people who moaned and groaned and complained were the people who were representing the fans at the meeting who said we had no right to gatecrash those meetings and say what we said and to treat the club in the manner that we had. The club were happy because the first thing they did was disband the advisory board, didn't they?
Well, the other one is another example of how they treat the other people. They're discussing those minutes, making a great, great player, one of the most talented uncapped England centre forwards has been, Len White, talking about putting him in the Hall of Fame. They had his family at the first match of the bloody season. Why is it taking to now to even consider talking about putting him in the Hall of Fame? When his family were there, that's when he should have been put in the Hall of Fame, not months later.
Can I ask where this Hall of Fame is, by the way? is there a little cupboard? Is there a corridor? Is it a cupboard? Is it in the ether of Newcastle United? I mean, it was one of the things that we put forward right in the early days on some of the minutes, some of the conversations we had. You know, the club should have a Hall of Fame, but it should be done properly. And all that happens now is they have the tag somebody on. They have the foundation event. The annual foundation dinner, and at that dinner they'll invite a couple of ex-players along and they'll induct them during that to the Hall of Fame. It should be an event in itself. Yeah. You know, it should be a big fanfare in itself, and everybody who's already in the Hall of Fame should be there to clap on the people who they're now being introduced to the Hall of Fame. Instead of it being Andy Cole sitting next to me and Bill Corcoran, and then we go, oh, what are you doing here, Andy? Oh, I've been inducted to the Hall of Fame, you know, which is exactly what happened. You know, the first thing we knew about it was when he told me, for goodness sake.
We were doing the black and white reunion right at the very start, and to be honest, we started the Hall of Fame when I had Players Inc., a company in the Northeast. Yeah. We were doing it, and then we actually went to the club, did one at the club, and then the club decided to do their own, so... You know, and that was under the previous owner.
Can I have one of the straps? Somebody said, oh, these people know what they're doing. I'm sorry, they know what they're doing in the business they used to. They don't know everything about Newcastle United, and they haven't taken a lot of time to try and get to know. So don't throw the they know best card. They'll know best when it's too late for us. That's what worries me. One thing I will say, and I've been saying it on here for a couple of weeks now, back in Saudi Arabia, there'll be people who will be talking to football-minded people. And then when they make the decisions, there'll be the sort of decisions Neil's been talking about, where they'll just swipe the board clean. Because it just for fans, it just isn't working. Yes, I love what's happened. If you want to see how to treat fans, go to the Magic Weekend with the bloody rugby league guys. I love that weekend. It's fantastic. And that's how to treat fans.
Yeah, Andy, I get your point. Listen, I love the show and all that NUFC matters do, but all this talk of fans advisory commission is not really worthy of such a debate. Surely it's about the football and not the politics. There's no football this weekend, Andy, and this has just been released, and it did for us warrant a debate. And as you know, Andy, as a regular viewer, we don't plan the show. So whatever crops up on the day, or if there's something big during the week, we talk about it. The football at the moment, sadly, revolves around injuries and a lot of them this season. And we already spoke about that on Wednesday's show. Obviously, the Geordie's here, Geordie's there. And the last thing I want to be talking about is ACLs and Sven Botman again, because we talked it to death on Wednesday. But I do have to play the ads. We are halfway through, only an hour and a half tonight. So here we go. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk, email info@mrvickys.co.uk, or telephone 01768 210 102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com, email info@unitedgrouptravel.com, or phone 01670 632 460, or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth, and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email john@nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the matchday bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from Ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the Northeast Footy Breakfast Show live on Tune Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers and thetuneuk.com. Don't forget as well, end of season due 20th of July, tenner a ticket in aid of Dementia Matters. Super Matt and Gibbo, George on stage, and the Long Sands are doing an acoustic set as well. Tickets from nufcmatters.com or newcastlelegends.com. Tickets are a tenner. And the evening with Peter Beardsley, which is in June at the Irish Club. Tickets are on sale now on Woucher, or you can buy them direct from nufcmatters.com or newcastlelegends.com. Okay. Going to lighten the mood a little bit and take you down the road of Tweet of the Week. Quite a few to get through. I'll whiz through them. My wife ran off with my best friend John yesterday. Since when is John your best friend, says the mate. Since And your child has been eaten by a camel. Do you A, save your child, or B, take a photo? Thinking this day, and you take a photo. a bloke at the gym this week said to me, he says, you realize, Steve, he says, if the Titanic sang today, he says, it would be a completely different thing. He says, people will be taking selfies. He said, there'd be loads of footage of the band and that. I says, you're actually right. And he went on for about 10 minutes explaining it. I was absolutely howling at this. Bird feeder. You're not fooling anyone, Bill. Cats do sit in the most peculiar of places. And he has a biker who identifies as a cyclist, and he's just won the Tour de France, lads. Congratulations.
Brilliant.
And Ian, thanks for this one. Last night, my wife said, come upstairs with me. I'll put on that black lace number. I said, no, thanks. I can't stand Agadoo. Potholes been in the agenda, becoming an absolute nightmare in Newcastle, but it is good for wildlife, lads. And another one from Gary. He's 104 years old. What's your excuse? The reply, he had more time to train. And here's a picture which sums up life. Life, life, life.
Yummy.
Chasing the money, and you cannot spend it when you get to retirement. And it's back again, lads. And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here? Becoming a regular feature, this. Thank you, Paul. I do like it. Of course they do. Their feet can barely touch the pedals. Cut them some slack. That in the response to the sign. Red squirrels ride slowly. And a new boy band. Very good. Like that one as well. And I never know which restroom to use in Scotland, says the man. Definitely not a Banksy, chaps.
Oh, dear.
No.
And Batman, very proud of his son there. And here's a fact. I'd like to give you some facts on a Friday. Did you know that Bob the Builder and Jack the Ripper have the same middle name?
Yeah, me.
Interesting fact. I think you're right. I didn't say anything yet. I'm just trying to save time. And I love this bus. Tweet of the week from Gary Thompson. He says, sorry, I'm late. I missed the
bus. Yeah.
Yeah. And if he sings, I'm out of the band, says the nose.
Oh, dear.
And hey, Siri, why do my relationships work out? This is Alexa. And another one of these athletics ones. The morning after a big curry, Toyota shuttle over.
Oh, dear me.
Gary's on form this week. What brings you to Canada? Well, I was in a pub in Dublin, and it said on my course to drink Canada Dry, so I thought I'd give it a go.
The oldies.
The old ones are the good ones. Here's Sonny and Cher. I got you, babe.
Oh, dear. Oh. Yeah, dear. Yeah.
And talk about unfortunate advertising in newspapers, lads. Horrendous, this, by the way. Joanne's husband lived with a dead wife's body in a wardrobe for 48 hours. Below, an advert for wardrobes. And we've heard a lot about seagulls in Sunderland. Seagulls continue to be a problem on an Australian beach as well, lads. And why? I'm certain these splits should be down the side. A bit of a fashion faux pas.
Definitely.
And apparently when you drink a pint of beer, you shorten your lifespan by 9 minutes. So according to my calculations, Stu Penman died sometime in 1644. And this is a true one, this, lads. This was actually in Newcastle last Sunday. I know times are tough and people are struggling, but someone's only walked in and nicked our turkey. See photo of where turkey was. The bastard. If we find out who it is, believe me, his giblets will be missing when the police find him. He's obviously came in on a wing and a prayer and got lucky. We have CCTV, but you cannot make him out, though we could make the turkey out. And we ask our customers to keep abreast of anyone trying to sell half a turkey. It's the left half that was left and taken. Hopefully he gets caught and gets some bird. Staff are too upset to be photoed. That's brilliant. Unusual reg plates. Thanks to Stephen Kennedy for this one. Yeah, can you see it?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yes, there we go. And Jimmy Moore, tweet of the week. He says, when I heard Jake Paul will be taking on Tyson in a match, this is what I thought of. Very good, that, yeah. A couple of Star Wars ones. Millennium Falcon breakfast, lads. Look at that.
Wow.
That's fantastic, isn't it? I love that. You must be able to buy that as well, Gary, somewhere. Like, so I'm gonna have to get that on the Christmas list. And this one, use the fork, Luke. And thanks to Tim for this one. Drink wherever we may be. Not bad for a couple of hours in Rochdale. This was the Newcastle United Supporters Club who went to Rochdale Football Club and drank 454 pints of San Miguel, 108 pints of Carlsberg, 93 cans of Red Stripe, 90 pints of Guinness, 68 pints of Somersby Cider, 68 Jaeger bombs, 2 for a 5, and 46 pints of Manchester Craft. So well done. And that isn't what I did with Steve Hasty and Stu Penman. It just felt,
you know,
like
what? That is fabulous thinking from a club like Rochdale. They say, we need to raise money. Can we get involved with you? Can you come and use our facilities? You know, any team who needs help, this is proper This is the fan show in the Premier League, how it should be done.
Yeah, yeah. For fans as well, that's the important thing. Fans for fans.
Exactly. Me on the way to ask the wife what's wrong with her. And Vanilla Ice has let himself go. Ice pastry. Dun, 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 dun.
More songs.
Uh-huh. Whoa. That's not how you make potato leek soup. Coming up to the top three, then. Here we are. Whoa, blackberry jam de lamb.
Number two,
sweet dreams are made of cheese. Who am I to disagree? I cheddar the world and the feta cheese. Everybody's looking for Stilton. There you go.
It works as well, you bugger. It works.
Very good. And the winner this week was a joint winner. Does anyone know where Ash Brown lives? I've got a number on him, please, on Facebook. Neil Hammond's went. Is that him? And the joint winner was this one. My girl looks so cute off guard. Probably text Nanny to see if she's okay. Does look like Michael Jackson. Thanks for the tweets of the week. I got through most of them this week. Got a couple left over for next week, but hope that's cheered everybody up after a little bit of a serious chat for the first 45 minutes. Okay, over there. Questions that which came in were, do you think 60,000 seater stadium might be enough at St James's Park? We did discuss that the other week, Tom. I think we've all had our say on that, but I'm sure we will discuss it more, I guess, when the feasibility studies come out and we'll get an idea of exactly what is happening. Neil said, Mitch, how's the asparagus tips going?
It's bamboo, you heathen.
There you go. It's bamboo, you heathen. David says, how many watches do you own, Mitch? So two questions for you.
38 at last count. 39 okay. Might be on the way.
And what's this other thing that you were asked about?
What, the bamboo?
Yeah.
If you look at Twitter, I took a picture at home. I've got
right, okay.
Because with his moving apartments, a patient who's really lovely guy, his missus is, I think, from Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's tradition when you move into a new house, for luck, you get given bamboo. And she was delighted with the work that I did for her husband, so she sent him in with a little bamboo thing to go in my lounge. And I've got it underneath the telly in a perfect place. You'd think she'd thought it through. And very grateful as well. You know what it is out here? You get relationships with patients and people because it's a funny city. It's a big, sparkly, shiny city that everybody sees, bloody Lamborghinis and all sorts. But actually, within the communities, it's a bit villagey. And once you get to know people, it's fantastic, actually. It's humbling. And so for somebody to go out their way to say, oh, you just moved apartments, there you go. This is what we do, tradition, good luck. Thanks for what you've done for me, husband. That's for you. Really touched. So, yeah, that's what it is. It's a little gift.
Okay. Paul Carter expressed a view in favour of ID checking. Generally, Paul should resign from the committee. No supporter should have to prove their ID. We don't live in Russia, says Andy. Just getting back to the FAB there, which I know a lot of us agree with. And as far as your opinion's concerned there, Andy. And Lee G says, I'm out tonight, but wanted to ask this question. If Sunderland were ever to get promoted, could they find themselves in Leicester's position? I remember them being in a bad way financially. I don't think they breached FFP, though, Lee. The fact that Sunderland have just got into debt and been mismanaged and due to the various owners that they've had, you know, they haven't breached FFP. So the answer to that question, I confidently would say no. I don't know the answer to this. Geordie Toombalay says, question for Steve and the lads. Did Newcastle pay the £63 million upfront for Isak? Or was it on payments? As one NUFC channel, I guess I can think who this is, and I haven't even seen this, thinks he will be sold for PSR reasons. He thinks that's the thing, Geordie Toombalay. Personally, I don't see how that makes sense. Look, the only people who genuinely know what deals have been done, or the agent, the player, and the club.
Unless
any of you have got inside information, lads, I don't know the answer to that question.
Isn't that how it should be, Steve?
Well, of course it is.
That's not the sort of details they want to be telling their commercial competitors. It would be ridiculous.
But it's all opinion and conjecture, even down to the Bruno thing with the 100 million release clause. We don't know what the actual technicalities and ins and outs and how easy it is to trigger that clause. I would suggest it's not very easy. And would work in a way that was exceptionally advantageous for us from a PSR perspective. So, you know, you just don't know. I know a few of the Dubai mags have been with the lads out here in Dubai today. So I haven't picked any brains yet. I've not had a chance to catch up with everybody. For the lads that are over, I think they're going back tomorrow after training. Looks like they've had a relaxed and good time, and I think everybody's going to come back very much recharged who's been out here. Sounds like it's been another good one for morale, if not else. It's all conjecture. The only people who know are within the club. And like my dad says, that's the way it should be. Time was, I think, between the contacts we all have, would have known the insides and outsides of everything. And we just don't know. We don't get it. I'm having some long bourbons and lemonade, by the way. It's very refreshing.
There we go. And FM used to be a bloke who used to drink in the big market, but I don't think that's who you mean, JC. He has it as 50 million installments over years. I presume that's Football Manager. Enough said. I'm saying maybe that's where this guy who's doing the other YouTube channel out there was getting the information from, sitting playing Football Manager. Yeah,
every club was paying, and every club does pay the transfer fee over a period of normally 4 years, don't they? That's the way that it works. And as you say, from an FFP point of view, in terms of what you get back from selling the player, you've already got £30 million that you're going to immediately have to fork out to the club that you bought them from. So from an FFP point of view, looking at it on face value, you're going to have to sell them for an awful lot of money to make it worth your while. But remember, under Ashley, we were really in the positive when it came to FFP. Because he hadn't spent much, and he had sold players, but he hadn't spent much money. It's the profit and sustainability aspect of the new rule that came in that has completely sidetracked us and sidetracked everybody else. Yeah. It's the profit and sustainability rule that has done Nottingham Forest. It's what's done Leicester, and it's what's done for Everton. The Chelsea situation was that they got off on a technicality of just paying 8 million. But the big question for Chelsea, of course, that's hanging over them is when you start to delve back. They overspent and they got away with it on a technicality. But when they've started to delve back and they've found all of this shenanigans that went on under the Abramovich time from way back to 2012 and earlier. That's the big problem they've got for them. And then obviously the man sitting with 15 charges. But it's like I said on Wednesday night on the show. At what point, if Man City, if having already seen what's happened to Everton, seen what's happened in Forest, what's going to happen to Leicester, the way that the Premier League have completely cobbled together the fines, the point deductions, the silly way that they've gone about it. When it comes to those other two clubs, where do they go? You know, if they get found guilty, does the Premier League just chuck them out and throw them into the Championship and say to the EFL, it's your problem now?
Yeah, these are
it's going to be lower than that.
Yeah, and at which point do they go, well, and the EFL go, well, we don't want them. You know, because they're quite within their rights. Because it's like, you know, this is how the clubs themselves have got in such a mess, in terms of the way that they've gone about The whole situation, basically, the way I look at it is that there's a root and branch change needed. But as I also said midweek, it's not the regulator who's going to be able to come up with the answers on this. And the only people who are going to come up with the answers are going to be the legals. That's where it's held.
Weak administration at the FA and the Premier League.
Yeah, and especially at the FA.
Yeah.
It's so difficult because people are trying to compare things and they're comparing apples and pears.
Yeah.
Everton's breaches came about with an exceptional amount of help and input from the Premier League. And when the Premier League realised they weren't going to listen and they weren't going to play a ball, they washed their hands of it and sent it to an independent commission. Nottingham Forest tried to balance the books at the very last minute and missed an accounting period, basically.
Yeah.
that's how they've breached it, effectively. Should they be punished at the same level at Everton, a different level of Everton? Very difficult, because the way they've fudged the punishments, it, as Forrest rightly said in that statement, well, we might as well have just gone bust and taken 9 points.
Yeah.
That's the most ridiculous part of it. Leicester's a different case again. They've made something like 625 million profit on player sales, and they still fail sustainability rules. Well, yeah, some of that's on the rules, and some of that's on them.
Mm-hmm. And some of it's on the fact that they were relegated, and they suddenly ended up in working under a different set of rules.
How much did they pay us for Jose Perez?
Yes.
30.
And he left on a free.
Yeah.
And they did that about six times over. And they changed managers. And so some of that is on Leicester. And some of it's not. But this is a farce to see where they're at now. They're going to come back up, most likely having danced through that league.
Yep.
And then going to start the season probably with a points deduction. Then I won't transfer embargo. I'll tell you what. By the end of the season, they won't be the only Championship club on a transfer embargo. And people asking about Sunderland, by the way, they're teetering on a precipice for that as well at the minute. If you look at what they've got going on with Clark, and they're saying, well, we're not going to be able to offer him the wages he wants, he's already off.
Yeah.
A number of other things, you know. Then the Chelsea thing. Chelsea saw what happened with UEFA, and basically everything got blamed on Roman Abramovich. And they're banking on that the Premier League are going to do the same thing again. And it ain't going to happen, guys. And I think they've just woken up to that in the last 18 months.
Yeah.
And so, again, their way of failure is very different to Nottingham Forest. So it was very different to Everton in some ways.
Chelsea will take the hit by not going into Europe. That's the hit that they'll take by doing Juventus. And then they'll, like, you look at Juventus, they didn't go into Europe. There was a penalty hanging over them. They said, I tell you what, we'll take it now. They take it now because it would have been the Conference League. That's where they would have been in. So they said, oh, well, tell you what, we'll not enter the competition. They took the hit, but they'll be straight back into the Champions League the following year.
They'll
have sorted their finances.
It still all makes a nonsense of certain things within PSR, that you've got clubs being fined for failing by 10, 12, 18 million, and then there's certain clubs who are nearly a billion in debt.
Yeah.
And nothing is said about that.
Yeah. That's
nothing said about that at all.
Isn't that the farce, though, that all of this is hitting clubs that are, by and large, being reasonably well run? And yet the ones at the top that have been writing the rules are all in massive, massive debt, billions of debt, not millions, billions.
And don't forget who they're in debt to. They're in debt to other clubs.
Yes.
£300 million to other football clubs.
Yes. Yep.
That point about Chelsea having to raise £100 million, otherwise they're going to fail. It's not £100 million. They've got to make £100 million profit.
Profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with some of the players they've got on their books and their book value, I cannot see that happening. Even if PIF helped them, even if the Saudi League helped them, I can't see it happening. I just can't. They're hanging their hats on Roman Abramovich getting all the blame. And they'll turn around to the government and say, well, you haven't still haven't paid the money to Ukraine yet. And, yeah. Or to the victims of the war, because some of that money may go to Russians.
Yeah, lots to debate, lots of questions and stuff coming in. We'll not get to all of them tonight, unfortunately. We have got a professionals for an hour and a half on Sunday, of course, so we may be able to discuss a few of these other things then. Tom, I do want a good look to Newcastle Women tomorrow in the Cup final. Hopefully bring the Cup back to the North East.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and I think you can watch it on YouTube, guys. So best of luck to them playing, of course, down in Luton. And 3,000 people travelling down there, George.
Yeah. Amazing, absolutely amazing, and that they're all the very positive things. And bravo to Amanda for, you know, lifting the women's team up to where they should be, where they need to be. Could I finish on a positive for me? Not finish. I mean, I want to go on to a positive. If anybody's feeling a bit down after all of this, listen to Anthony Gordon's interview at the international session. They interviewed him. Listen to that interview, and that tells you all the players, all the people who, me a little bit, have been having a go at Eddie Howe and all the other things that's bad. Listen to what that young man says about Newcastle United. Listen to what he says about how it's changed his life. He was a little twerp in Everton. Well, he's now a little twerp with a bloody good footballer. And if you want a boost, listen to his interview.
Okay, good stuff. Got about just under 15 minutes left. I've got time to play my favourite music. The day I met, where we ask you to send in photographs of you meeting somebody from Newcastle, past or present. And thanks to Gary for this one. He said, what great owners we have. Very apt photo for tonight.
Yeah, it is.
Amanda
yeah.
and Mia Dad sent that one in. Four great photographs. Looks like it's in Shearer's bar or somewhere in and around the ground. But thanks for sending that in. If anybody's got a photograph of you meeting somebody from Newcastle, past or present, send it in so I can play this music. And we've had discussions on here about statues in the past and who should have a statue at Newcastle and what's the worst statue you've ever seen. This has to be the best one. I put this up on the show last night, and Malcolm McDonald felt that was Jimmy Hill.
Yes.
It is, in fact, Harry Kane. This is this much talked about statue that's been built for his constituency where he was born, which will sit on a park bench like that. I think he paid around about £7,500-£8,000 for it to be made. And it's been stuck in a cupboard or a shed for about a year. But it does have a Jimmy Hill look. I know maybe the angle it's taken that doesn't do it the justice. No. Maybe it looks better when you look at it from the front or whatever. But it's the chin, isn't it? It's the chin.
Yeah.
It looks like it's made out of chocolate, doesn't it?
It does.
But,
yeah.
Steve, I was just about to say, all these bronze statues that I've seen recently of footballers look like they've been made out of chocolate and then left in the sun for a bit.
Yeah. Is that a Cadbury's Easter cane, says Stephen Nutton?
Yeah. Well, it's like the Ronaldo one as well, isn't it?
I mean,
that's hideous. That absolutely looked like that hideous. Was made
and then just put a gas mark 2 for about 20 minutes.
Yeah. It needs a bit of work. Whoever did that needs a bit of work. Barry says, this show helps keep us fans sane, shared opinions and concerns, all done in the right way. Thank you so much to Steve and the guys and all the moderators and chatters. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Barry.
Gary says, the statue looks like the wind-up statue they did of Beckham when he was had over. Trolls says, the beard is a bit heavy on the statue of Kane, to be fair, says Trolls. Barry is still defending Sprouts in the chat. It's not even Christmas now, Barry, and you've still got Sprouts. That's the only time we have them. Something which won't take too long to finish the show is Barry's comment, actually, about the St. George's flag on the back of an England shirt. Nike have come out and I think more or less retracted the decision they made. I just didn't understand why they did it. Steve, it was a strange one. Why mess with something which is a flag? Would they do the same with America's flag? That's probably my question.
Yeah, I mean, this is an American company, Nike, who have gone over the top recently in an awful lot of promotions. They like the court controversy. They like to rock the boat. They like to feel as though that they are in with a kids type of attitude. You don't fiddle around with the flag. You don't change the flag. Then you don't cobble together some excuse that, well, the colours we've used are to pay homage to the tracksuits that were worn in the 1966 World Cup, which were actually red, white and blue if you look at the cuff around the tracksuit. Yeah. They weren't purple and pink.
That was a panic. That was somebody sitting in a room, like on a Zoom call going, well, what do we say? How can we get out of this?
Yeah.
I know. 1966, the tracksuit.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. I mean, I listened to a number of ex-pros, ex-England players today on the radio, both this morning and this afternoon, from Peter Shilton to David Seaman to Stuart Pearce, and to a man, everyone was saying, you don't mess with the flag. And the other aspect, of course, is the fact that the kit's £124.99 for a
beer. Yeah, dear me.
I think that's why they've done it, to avoid criticism of the price. I think they've thrown in a dead cat story.
Yeah.
Even the copy strips, net 84 quid, 85 quid. Yeah. I mean, the 124 is the player's strip, isn't it? But the 80 quid for the normal shop one is ridiculous as well.
Yeah, I think the full kit with the shorts and the top and the socks for a Ben as well is a ridiculous price.
Ridiculous.
It used to be £29.99, then it suddenly rocked up to £49.99. Now it seems to be the world's oyster in terms of how much you pay for a kit. Then you've got that other situation where only 3 years ago, and I'm going back, I shouldn't go back to what we talked about before, but it was only 3 or 4 years ago that every club in the country was touting the fact that they could actually fill the grounds for free. The amount of money that fans were contributing, they were being happy to fill the grounds for free because the Premier League and Sky TV wanted the grounds to be full. And now all of a sudden we're talking £100 a game, you know. You know, everything's been turned on its head in the last 3 or 4 years since COVID. Everybody, you know, the world has just gone crazy. The football world's gone crazy. The sports world's gone crazy. Some of the decisions that are being made are absolutely ridiculous. It smacked the whole aspect of the change in the colour of the flag. Smacked of a couple of graduates from art college getting jobs in the likes of Nike and then coming up and saying, well, what can we do? What can we do? What can we rock the boat with? Or, you don't need to worry about the football fans. Oh, no, no. You know, it's anything goes now. You know, if we want to put out a multicoloured version of a flag, we can do it. Nobody's got the right to complain to us about it. It's almost getting to that stage now. In fact, it is already at that stage.
Yeah.
And it's a sad indictment of where society's heading at the moment. And then if you do complain, then you'll get drawn onto the other side of the argument. You're either a flag shagger or you're a racist who waves the what used to be the Union Jack, but now it's the flag of St. George. You know, you, as a proud Englishman, There's you can't win. As a proud Scotsman, you probably can't win. As a proud Irishman and a proud Welshman, you're not going to win at any of those arguments, because no matter what you say, the minority will come at you, because the minority becomes the majority.
You're right. We've got 5 minutes left. So, Mitch, your comments on this.
Sorry.
It's a product of the time. The binary argument I go on about, you're not this, therefore you must be that, and nothing in between. Can we have a go about changing the colours of a flag, when I've seen plenty of black, white and grey and black, white and blue Union Jacks on Newcastle United flags over me time? Umbro put four different colours of St George's Cross on a shirt once, but it wasn't in a time where people were prepared to stand up and make an issue of it or make an argument of it. Nike is a company over history. Since they took a hammering in the late 90s and early 2000s, they went through a period where they couldn't do anything right. They got hammered for sweatshops in Vietnam, and then they stood by Lance Armstrong while he lied. And since then, they've been desperate to try and latch on to certain aspects of arguments and debates to show how with it they are. And the one that stands out for me is Colin Kaepernick. They get him behind him when he had issues with NFL teams, and then to have him turn around and criticise Nike at the end of it because, quote unquote, he felt like a slave.
Yeah.
this is a company who are absolutely unable repeatedly to read a room. They're like one of these companies who come up with a fancy new logo and everybody looks at it and goes, did you show that to a 13-year-old boy? Because that looks like a cock. Did you not think that one through? And again, this is one that they thought would be a fantastic idea, and nobody's had the balls to just put the hand up in the meeting and go, maybe he's just back off from that a little bit.
Yeah.
Particularly the FA. I would like to see the reaction here in the UAE.
Yep.
If somebody changed the colours of the flag of the UAE on a product destined for the UAE, right now, they would sell zero. It will be torpedoed tomorrow. And that's not because the UAE are racist or flag shaggers or anything like that. They're exceptionally proud of that country, and they're exceptionally proud of that flag, which I think was designed by a 12-year-old, by the way. But it's one of these things where why do it? Why even invite the argument?
Exactly.
It's stupid, it's senseless, it's thoughtless. And for a multinational corporation the size of Nike, fucking ridiculous.
And then, and for the FA to sign it off as well, by the way.
Yeah.
Equally
yeah.
So.
George,
you've got 2 minutes to wrap it up, George, because I've got a train to catch.
Right, okay. Well, Winston Churchill, more wars have been fought over flags and religion than anything else.
And that's it.
Yeah, and the other thing is, what? Get Freddie Fletcher back. He'll show them how to sell strips. When he was in charge, we sold more black and white strips in Glasgow than Rangers and Celtic did. That takes some doing.
Great show. An hour and a half of good debate. Thanks to everybody in the chat. I'm back in the morning, 11 o'clock. As requested, I think Dave was going, when's Ben Jacobs coming back on? Well, he's back on Saturday. 11 o'clock in the morning. And then 6 o'clock, we will be back with the professionals on Sunday night. Have a good weekend. Enjoy whatever you're doing. Enjoy the international football if you're watching it. Thanks, Steve, Mitch and George. Take care, lads.
Cheers, everyone.
Ta-ra, everybody. Ta-ra.